Right. We're going to continue on with our next presentation. As Professor Anderson alluded to and promised, you're going to hear more about Van Dyke and how it's going to be impacting, I think, all of our careers going forward, at least for the next few years. Our next speaker is Ryan Clinton with Davis, Gerald, and Kramer, based in Austin. I'm sure all of you have read or relied upon many of the cases that Ryan has worked on, so I don't believe much further is needed. And with that, I will give you Ryan Clinton.
It is not advisable to follow the professor ever. It is particularly inadvisable to follow the professor on the topic that he just covered very well. But I'll do my best this morning. Thank you. Good morning. It's really, truly an honor to be here, as always, among friends and colleagues and clients and opposing counsel and co-counsel. It's really nice to see everyone. I co-authored this paper with the paper that's attached to this presentation with Lane Schmelzer, who's here, my colleague at Davis, Gerald, and Kramer. If there's anything particularly insightful that you see in the paper, I assure you it came from her. If there's anything particularly dumb in the paper, it probably came from me. Lane is a superstar. She just rolled off a clerkship from the Texas Supreme Court. And so we actually had to do a little bit of a dance because we felt like it was the right thing to have her not comment on Van Dyke since she was there. So I wrote the parts that really did the Van Dyke analysis, and she did more of the historical analysis. But Lane is amazing and can probably answer more questions than I can. Okay, so here's what we're going to cover, and I'm going to try to, because Professor Anderson did cover some of the topics that I'm going to talk about, I'll try to emphasize those that we talked about and that Lane and I have discussed that were not emphasized in his. But Texas's rules of instrument construction, which I think lay the foundation for discussing or analyzing Van Dyke or trying to make sense of it. The Van Dyke decision itself, which I'll try to minimize, I guess, a little bit in this presentation because it was covered so well. Historical treatment of the estate misconception, the legacy of the 1/8, and the presumed grant doctrines, which are the things that drive the Van Dyke decision, and lessons learned and questions that were not answered by the opinion that I think we're going to end up litigating for the next decade or two. I frankly think that Van Dyke was the most important, consequential, and controversial decision of the court in the last year, possibly in the last few years. As the professor spoke about, there are a lot of things that someone could say may or may not make sense, but at the end of the day, I think what happened is that the court made effectively an equity decision, which was this is the way they've always treated it, so this is the way we're going to treat it. And I think we should anticipate that courts will ultimately make similar decisions. Well, let's talk more in depth. So the Texas's rules of instrument construction, we've all read, and I think what's interesting to me is how you can contrast the traditional rules of instrument construction with the rules that, as they were stated in Van Dyke, because I think that one of the things that happened in Van Dyke is that we see a shift from an emphasis on determining what the party's intent was, away from that, and to an emphasis on determining what the meaning of the words were at the time they were written. And those are two different things. What parties intended by their language is different from what the words meant objectively at the time from a historical context. And so what we see, I think, is a shift towards this Scalia-Garner textualism and originalism away from trying to just figure out what these particular parties intended, which I think is what the Hyslop opinion was a party's intent decision, whereas in Van Dyke, I think what we see is an originalism and textualism opinion. So I think that we could actually see that shift possibly occur in other cases, and we need to be mindful of it in all of our cases before that court, is what is going to speak to the current justice of the court? Is it going to be the party's intent, which is largely subjective, or is it going to be original meaning, which is largely objective? But traditionally, this is what the court has told us, and not just traditionally, these are very recent cases, right? The purpose of the instrument construction is to determine and enforce the party's intent as expressed within the four corners of the instrument. And they tell us we can't go beyond the four corners. We only can look to the words of the instrument to determine what the party's intent of the instrument was.